Good morning. The Fan Morning Show. Blake Murphy. Ilish Forfar. JD Bunkus. Grant Hill coming up. This Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Now joined by former NBA forward and NBA analyst for TNT, Grant Hill. Grant, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. No complaints.
Great. Glad to hear it. So the big news yesterday in the NBA is, of course, the fallout from that LeBron James-Isaiah Stewart skirmish. LeBron gets one game for it. That's the game on TNT tonight. Lakers at Knicks at Madison Square Garden. That'll no longer have LeBron James involved. Are you surprised that the league came down on LeBron with the suspension for that?
No, I'm not surprised at all. I mean, you know, we understand LeBron. I think Anthony Davis said it after the game there in Detroit that, you know, his resume, he's not a dirty player. He's never had sort of altercations like this that were physical in nature. But the rules are pretty clear. And, you know, if you strike a player in the head, whether, you know, trying to block a shot in transition or whatever the case may be, blocking out of the free throw line, such as he did, you know, that calls for some sort of accountability, some sort of punishment. And, you know, you have to ask the question, okay, well, if Isaiah Stewart didn't respond, would the league have come down as hard? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But I think the combination of all that occurred, a suspension was warranted. Unfortunate, because it is a big game, big TV game. Certainly, I work with TNT, so I know that's a big television night for us. But, you know, rules are rules, and I think the punishment was fair and appropriate.
Yeah. If it wasn't for it being at MSG, I would have thought that LeBron just wanted load management. He's like, okay, here's the thing, Mr. Silver. I'll have a night off and you can say it's a suspension, but this is my league. I run it and we'll go as forward. But in that, it's like, oh, wow, this is a little bit of power play. It's the MSG game.
Yeah. We're talking to...
Yeah, well, I mean, well, LeBron's had enough load management. I mean, I know it's interesting. Just, you know, they got to get it going, the Lakers, you know, and I know we're still early in the year, but you know, they you can't really decide who they are until LeBron gets back and they have a series of games, you know, 10 games or kind of 20 games to get their flow, their rhythm, their chemistry. And right now, it's interesting. You don't know who they are. It's hard to evaluate what the Lakers are because LeBron has missed so much time.
Yeah, so it is a tough one. Again, Lakers-Knicks on TNT tonight, as well as Nuggets-Trailblazers. We're talking to Grant Hill, Hall of Famer, an NBA analyst for TNT. I wanted to – this is maybe more niche than people want to hear, but there were eyebrows raised a little bit when you threw a Bo Outlaw comp out for Jonathan Kuminga recently. I liked it. I remember back in Pascal Siakam's rookie year, Dwayne Casey threw out that comp for – Siakam as well, and obviously Siakam's really outshot that on the offensive side of the ball. So I just used that to set up. Have you gotten a chance to watch Pascal Siakam as he's been back here in these first seven games, and where do you see him at versus when we last saw him?
Yeah, well, first of all, let me just clarify that Bo Outlaw comment. I was referring to his energy level,
okay,
not his offensive game. And I know people kind of like, where did that come from? But Stan Van Gundy, who was calling the game with me, the Warriors versus the Nets, and also coached Bo later on in his career. But Bo was a one-man full-court trap. I mean, his energy level was off the charts. And so that was where I was comparing. Mm-hmm. And also, I guess, can understand where, you know, Siakam, where there's some similarities.
For sure.
He's got great length. He plays with a great motor, great energy level. And I think his offensive game year in has gotten better and improved. And, you know, they're going to, of course, need him healthy. But, I like the potential of this team. They're still kind of young, kind of figuring things out, a little bit of changing of the guard. But OG's been really good. The young fella, Scotty Barnes, of course, Siakam. you know, it's now sort of integrating Siakam back in and, mm-hmm. and sort of reestablishing roles. But defensively, this team can really force a lot of turnovers. I think they have the ability to do that. But it's going to take some time to sort of figure out kind of who they are. Can they consistently shoot the ball well from the field? Can they get out in a break and score in transition? But Siakam has a chance to take a big step, and he's kind of the he and Van Vliet are the two holdovers from those championship years. So, you know, they go from being the young guys to now the experienced veterans on their ball club. But I like his game. I have not seen him. I've not watched so much him play as of late, you know, since he came back. But I did I've seen a couple of the games that they actually called the Raptors game in Garden against New York. And that was maybe one of their best performances of the season about 2 or 3 weeks ago. So they're kind of like most teams right now in the Eastern Conference. They're just trying to kind of find their way. I mean, they're kind of, you know, on the outside looking in, but there's like a little bit of a log jam, not too much between, you know, a 12th seed and a 6th seed. It's a few games here and there. And so they have a chance to kind of get it going and, you know, hopefully for their sake, get themselves into the playoff conversation.
I personally love any Bo Outlaw comparison, because if you look at what the Raptors are building and the type of player they love, a 6'8" multi-position energy defender, they would have been, you know, if he comes along 15 years later, the Raptors would have been all over a guy like Bo Outlaw. He's a very typical bench Raptor. So I like it. Another Raptor I wanted to ask you about just before we move back to kind of an NBA-wide thing. Gary Trent Jr. is a guy for the Raptors that, you know, obviously there's the Duke connection there, and that's why it stands out to ask you. But he has shown a fair amount of growth this year in terms of his scoring volume and even his defense a little bit. What do you think of Gary Trent Jr. and where he might be able to go? Because the Raptors bet pretty big on him this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, of course I'm biased because of the Duke connection, but you know, I think he's, you know, he's a young man who has a tremendous amount of confidence and can really score the ball. Can get hot. I mean, he's a, you know, I don't want to say quite streaky, but he's a guy that is very efficient, very confident. I think he's improved a little bit with his off the dribble and not just all catch and shoot. His defense definitely steals deflections. Gambling, get out in the passing lane, really playing well in that Nick Nurse sort of style of play defensively, trapping, forcing turnovers, getting out, getting easy baskets in transition. But for him, you know, getting out of Portland, I mean, he was always going to kind of be a backup there, particularly with McCollum and Lillard. And so now he has a chance to really, you know, be a starter and blossom as a player. He has a tremendous work ethic. He's somebody who I remember when he was at Duke and just, you know, I heard from the coaches there. He was just the ultimate gym rat. Obviously grew up around it. His father was a pro, comes from good stock. But, you know, he seems like a young guy who just wants to get better, wants to improve, wants to, you know, get close to realizing his potential. And, you know, he's at a position that's tough. You know, and certainly there's a lot of great players that he's playing against in the Eastern Conference. But I do like him, and I think his growth, his maturity, and just kind of getting comfortable now, you know, in a new environment, new team. Obviously, he was there last year, but, you know, last year was a little bit of a wash with all that franchise had to endure, being, you know, down in Tampa and away from their home, you know, home environment. But I like this kid. I love his game. I love his confidence. And I love that he's improved. He's gotten better. And he didn't have the easy road. You know, he didn't come in with all the fanfare and being a lottery pick. You know, he had to go down to the G League, and he didn't play a whole lot at first, but he just kept fighting, kept clawing, kept improving to the point where now he's an important part of this team and its future.
So stepping back to more of a league-wide NBA approach, you played with Steve Nash in Phoenix. And so my question to you is, how do you think he's done stepping into the head coach role in Brooklyn this year?
Yeah, I thought he did a really good job. I mean, he stepping in last year, a team with incredible expectations, not having your traditional sort of off-season ramp up with, you know, summer league and, you know, traditional training camp. Really kind of having to learn on the fly. Like, kind of building the plane as you're flying it, you know, if you will. And I thought he did a stellar job last year. There's been a lot of scrutiny and a lot of expectations and maybe even a lot of distractions associated with that team in just a year, you know, year and you know, the last year, and I guess the last year, calendar year. And he's managed it well. You know, I think he just sees big picture. He understands personalities. He understands how to connect with guys. You have some interesting, very demanding at times personalities maybe on that team. You know, I also think being able to make adjustments throughout the season, being able to adjust throughout the game. I mean, right now, with all things said and done, and I know it's still, you know, still relatively early, but they're sitting atop the Eastern Conference, you know, by one game. And I don't get the sense they played great ball yet. You know, they had the embarrassment last week against the Warriors at home. But they're winning the games against the teams they're supposed to win. They're getting better defensively. Durant has been all world. Harden is trying to find his way and his rhythm. But the defensive improvement is something that is impressive. And, you know, I joke with Steve, he wasn't known for being a great defensive player, but he's really sort of helping this team turn the corner on that end. And I think that will serve them well throughout the season and, you know, later on into the postseason.
Yeah, I'm glad that you put it that way, because I do feel like a lot of the times the framing of the Steve Nash as the Nets head coach is just simply, hey, people like this guy and he's easy to be around. And so that's that. Like, he's not here for anything other than basically to be a communicator to Durant and to Harden. And obviously, like, those guys, and I guess if Kyrie was there, but, and I know that those guys obviously dictate the success of this team. They're the players. They're the ones who determine the outcomes. But yeah, just like sometimes I feel like it's a little bit, I don't want to say disrespectful. That feels heavy towards Nash, but yeah, dismissive of other things that he brings. And I'm glad that someone like yourself who knows him and who knows this game as well as you do can kind of put it in a way that is beyond just like, hey, he doesn't piss off Kyrie. You know, he knows how to not piss off guys in an NBA locker room. So these are always weird questions because your career was incredible. You won two national championships. You made the NBA Hall of Fame. But do you look at the NBA now where there's so many guys that profile a little bit closer to what you were as a player and sometimes say, man, I would have loved to have seen what it would be like had I been around for this era of basketball. Again, your skill set was very appreciated then. It was very successful then. But I do wonder if you care at all about it or it's something that you ever play out as a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I played until 2013.
Yep.
And the league was starting to change, and I saw the evolution of the game and the change in the game from, you know, 1994 when I was drafted until 2013. Mm-hmm. But the game has changed even more so since 2013. And so to be able to watch it and follow it. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's human nature to sort of envision what it would be like if you were younger, you know, your 22-year-old self entering the league in this environment. What would that be like? The game, you know, it's more wide open, obviously more three-point shooting, less bodies in the paint because of the big men back in the day. You know, you had centers and power forwards who tended to clog up the lane. So it was a different game, maybe a little bit more physical, although I think the league is bringing back some physicality, you know, and giving the defense an opportunity to really compete and not handicap them with some of the touch fouls. But, yeah, I mean, I think the pace of the game, the amount of points or amount of possessions throughout a game, I think the shooting is off the charts, but I think for a guy like me who would like to have the ball in his hands and slash and attack, I think there's more space, more openings, more room to operate. You know, so, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think all of us probably in some form or fashion try to envision or imagine what it would be like. But I also recognize the incredible gifts and talents and skill set of today's player. I mean, the shooting is just off the charts. Everybody shoots three-pointers and shoots them pretty well. and the skill level and the commitment to working on their games in the off season. It's fun to follow as a fan, as a broadcaster, as an owner.
Yeah. So that's actually, I remember when one of the games that I covered, I was actually in one of your locker rooms when you were here with Phoenix. And I remember coming in and seeing you in there with just like the ice pegs on your knees and going like, boy, this guy loves basketball. Like he's playing into his like late 30s. And yeah, I just, the ice, the amount of ice after that game, it always kind of stuck with you. Like, wow, great. It was like packing those ice packs in. And I think back of those Phoenix teams where you're talking about like how revolutionary it is or how much the game is changing and how it was like, man, look at this Phoenix team. Look at the way that they play. It's so unique. This offense is so unique, so different. And now you drop that Phoenix team into the NBA and we're like, man, these guys don't shoot enough threes. Like, you know, these guys play too slow. You know, it's like they gotta shoot more. There needs to be more volume. Last one though, off of this. And it's the offshoot of you being you and you having your style of play is that you players that could compare to you are bigger forwards who can get to the rim and who are playmakers. And granted, you were a better shooter than Ben Simmons was. But I wonder if when you watch him, you A, see yourself, and B, given, yeah, your perspective and the amount of time that you were around the league, what you would say to him if he came to you and asked for advice right now?
Well, I mean, there's so much uncertainty right now, in part because we have not heard from Ben. We have heard, you know, that there's some mental health issues or could be. And, you know, look, I'm unqualified, I guess, to be able to help and support someone if that's the case. But, you know, strictly on the court as it relates to basketball, you know, he does play the game and see the game from a beautiful standpoint. There's this great unselfishness. He loves to pass. He plays defense. I mean, he's an elite defender, great ball handle. I mean, he does some things that are really that make him special. You know, I do think the shooting part needs to improve, and really just baby steps, really just the free throw shooting. I mean, if he can just get to a level of confidence and comfortability where he's, you know, knocking down a higher percentage at the free throw line, then, you know, he's more inclined then to be aggressive and attacking the rim and not shying away from contact. He doesn't have to be a three-point shooter. He doesn't even have to be a mid-range shooter at this point. But, you know, clearly there's some challenges. You haven't seen that improvement. Typically big guys who, you know, you think of Shaq and you think of some other bigs who historically have struggled shooting from the free throw line throughout their careers. But it's interesting because he's an incredible ball handler. He's got incredible feel and touch with the ball. And sometimes, usually that translates, you know, translates to good shooting. So I don't know. I mean, I'm like most of us, an outsider looking in. I know what's happening now is troubling and just they're not, you know, not able to play and wanting out and the mental health stuff. And so, you know, you just hope for him that he can get right and get back on the court wherever that might be, because he's a great player, has so much to offer. And he's the kind of guy, I think, you know, for me, as someone who's been a part of the player fraternity, if you will, you know, you just want to see him succeed. You want to see him be successful wherever that might be. But, you know, there's some areas of improvement. We haven't seen his shooting improve. That's a little bit alarming. But if he can just commit to getting better, you know, he has a chance to be a great player, and his team has a chance to be a great team.
Grant Hill, Hall of Famer, NBA analyst for TNT. Thank you so much for taking the time this morning. We really appreciate the insights.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That Insider has been brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. Grant Hill.
Yeah.
We got a Sprite machine anywhere in here?
What a Hall of Fame hour we have. Two Hall of Famers in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Back to back.
Not a big deal.
Good job by Daniele.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our producer, Daniele. Yay, Daniele. Yeah.
Did the shrug. He did the classic.
Like, yeah, big deal.
Yeah, he's acting like he's been there before.
Yeah, he gets us good guests all the time. That was awesome, though.
Hall of Fame hour, though.
It is a Hall of Fame hour.
Yeah. I think just like it's weird. You look back on Grant Hill's career, and he's one of the classic, oh, man, if this guy had never gotten injured guys. Mm. And yet he played till he was 40.
Wow.
Right? And I do, like, that is truly a vivid memory for me. I didn't want to say this to him, but it made me feel sad and old because when I was a kid, I remember I was at, like, some Scholastic book fair.
I love the Scholastic book fair. I can smell the smell of it right now, like the books and the goodies.
Smell of the books. I just picture Ailish Cracker.
You know exactly what that smell is.
But for you, the Scholastic Book Fair was like 6 years ago. It's like, of course you can remember. It was right there. You just left Scholastic Book Fair to come here this morning. Grant, I had this book that was a Grant Hill, Penny Hardaway book. It was like a split book, like a children's, hey, here's a little thing on Grant Hill. And then the back half of the book is a thing on Penny Hardaway. And it was their backgrounds, their stories, this different stuff. And then weirdly, they both ended up as guys who were the two. What if this guy had never been injured guy? The difference is that Penny's career was like, it's over. Whereas Grant was such a damn good player that even when he was robbed of all those years, he still played until he was 40.
Yeah.
40.
Those first 6 years of his career, the numbers are insane. Wild as far as, hey, a wing who's going to score a ton and be a playmaker from that position. And then it was basically 4 years or like five out of six after that where he barely played.
Yeah.
And then to have a third act like that of like, hey, I'm going to tack on 6-7 years here and be a steady vet who can still ball.
I think that's still one of the biggest what ifs in NBA history is what if he had not gotten hurt and it was T-Mac, Grant Hill, and Tim Duncan in Orlando.
See you with the time machine again.
Yeah,
I love the time machines.
It's
I'm
time
sorry.
Time Machine Tuesday.
I like to hop around. Yeah. Do you have any texts or you want to take a break and do Hall of Fame Hour continues? It's up to you. You're the boss.
Why is it up to me?
Because
you're the boss.
You're the boss. Yeah, I just said. What do you
just
mean?
Just established
like,
that.
Yeah. I was like, hey, you're the boss. And then you're like, why is it up to me?
So Dan from The Bridge has texted in three times. And he says in brackets, Woodbridge for JD.
Yeah, thank you.
Two of the texts, hot take, Leafs are going 3-0 in this roadie. I don't think that's a hot take.
Yeah.
And then, is it only me, but did anyone else not realize the Leafs play Buffalo and Hamilton in an outdoor game this year? You know what? It hasn't been talked about much, but it's also in March.
Yeah. It's in March. There's a Grey Cup in Hamilton before
then. That's right.
Then.
It's going to be Arkell's Power Hour.
What do you want the conversation to be?
But usually
this morning on the morning show.
Yes. In 7 months from now.
Next year, there's going to be a game in Hamilton and it's going to be outside. The outdoor games, I think everyone has found the right little niche on, which is that they shouldn't be these massive events, except for the Lake Tahoe one, because my God, that's still to this day is like, if I'm in a bad mood, I just think about that Lake Tahoe shot and go, that might be my happy place.
There should be one a year only. Now there's stadium series and there's this and there's that. And it just should be one a year.
Oh, see, I don't mind there being multiple because it's whatever, because it's kind of fun. I just wish there was actually one a year where they didn't even really care about the seating and the stands and they just did it in like these beautiful, weird.
Imagine one on Lake Louise or something.
Yeah, that's it. Like, it's just do one a year like that Tahoe game.
Or like in the Swiss Alps.
Yeah. The only problem is that if you're the athletes and you're the guys who actually play these games and you're playing in a puddle and you're like, hey, I'm really not trying to toe pick and tear my ACL so that you can go, Tahoe is pretty. We should go there sometime. And that's the only one where I go, right.
One more.
Didn't Sid almost get killed in a Winter Classic game too? Like,
probably.
Pretty sure he got one of his conchos in one.
Sure. That's tough.
Yeah, Steckel. Right. Yeah.
Dave says, went and bought a Sprite today. Thanks to you guys.
There you go.
Great.
Love it.
A free ad show.
Keep the ads coming.
Hey,
free ads.
The show that every brand loves because they all, hey, and you get a show and you get a sponsorship. You pay nothing. Pay nothing today, pay nothing tomorrow. That's the Fan Morning Show.
It sure is. Speaking of ads, we're going to pay those bills right now. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to 5-time Olympic medalist and Hockey Hall of Famer, Jana Hefford. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. A little tragically hit for you this morning while we wait to talk to Jana Hefford, who is just honored in Kingston with a little tragically hip connection there. quite the weekend for women's hockey. Canada-US will rematch again tonight in Ottawa after their devastating overtime loss on Sunday in a sold-out crowd in Kingston, where Jayna Hafford, five-time Olympic medalist, consultant for the PWHPA and Hockey Hall of Fame inductee, was honored. Welcome to the show, Jayna. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
What a wonderful time it was in Kingston this weekend. Obviously, you had a very special moment to have your jersey retired and kind of set up this return home for the Canada-US rivalry series. What was the weekend like, and run us through it? I wish I could have been there. Sold out crowd, but I was definitely watching on TV. It was an awesome experience.
Yeah, it was an amazing weekend. I was excited that Canada and the U.S. were going to Kingston to begin with. I never had a chance to play there while I played, but we've seen great support in Kingston. Obviously, I felt that way through my career, and then the PWHPA played a game there early 2020, and I think we had 3,500 people come out to watch a Montreal-Toronto game. So the support for women's hockey is there, so I was excited for that, and then to hear it sold out in 2 days, I was, excited for the players to be able to play in an environment like that. And then, of course, the jersey and the number retirement was just sort of extra special. And Hockey Canada and the city of Kingston really did a fabulous job, and just it made it a really fun night for me and my family and friends. And, of course, bringing the tragically hip out and being able to kind of have that moment with all friends and family and lots of former teammates that were on the ice. It was just it was really wonderful experience.
It's incredible. And yeah, I always love when we bring on guests where the title, like when we're like, okay, we got to give her like four different things. It's like, okay, and then also this, and then also that, Yeah. But I need this. So it's Kingston royalty. Like, it's a lot of cool Kingston moment, but you got to answer something from me. Tell me, like, I've been to a lot of places in Canada. I'm from Whitehorse, Yukon. I swear to God, Kingston is the coldest place on earth. Like, Kingston hits that Kingston cold. When it's cold there, it's different. It's like,
I can vouch. I did 4 years there.
It's the coldest place on earth. I'll never be able to understand quite exactly how it chills the bones the way that it does.
Well, yeah, we had one day there that was a little chilly with the wind coming off the lake, but it was a beautiful city. It's a beautiful city. And, for some of there were some of the women I spoke to that both on Canada and the U.S. that hadn't been there before. And I was happy they had a couple nice days to really enjoy it, because it really is a special place.
Jayna, so your jersey was retired, and we know from a few years ago that your jersey was retired in Kingston minor hockey as well. I have a bit of a awkward question in terms of, obviously, it's amazing the example you've set and for future generations to look up to you, and I'm sure lots of kids do look up to you. How do you feel, like, when I saw that, I was like, huh, that's really cool, but also, like, if I was a kid playing Kingston minor hockey, like, I would want to wear your number. So I almost feel like retiring the number for the minor league, while it's nice, it would be like so cool for some of those kids to get to wear it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I think you look at, there's positives on both sides of it. But when I think about if I were a young girl and saw a female hockey player being celebrated like that and the recognition, that would have changed a lot in my mind. And then I have a son too. And so I think for young girls and young boys to see both women and men in the rafters of that arena as, having great hockey careers and contributions, I think that's a pretty powerful thing. And so I think I'd take that over the number part.
So we got to see Canada back on home ice after they were out in Finland, where they had a 3-0 sweep of the Finns. It was an OT loss to USA on the weekend, but nonetheless, a great showing for Team Canada. What are you looking forward to seeing about this team while they head to Beijing?
Well, obviously, the Canadians have looked pretty good since the World Championships, and happy for them. Obviously, I know a lot of them pretty well, and I know it's been a rough number of years in the Canadian program, and sometimes it takes a while to really kind of figure out your identity, and especially as you have new leaders and young players coming in. But I think they're in a good place, and they're feeling really good. But if anyone thinks this is going to be easy, or you're going to win every game in the lead up to the Olympics, the Americans are too good, and this rivalry is too intense. So, it was another showing of that last night, and I guess 2 nights ago, and then we've got another game tonight in the rivalry series. So, it's going to be it's getting pretty interesting, I think, leading up to the Olympic Games. And they're two evenly matched teams, so we'll see what happens. But certainly the intensity is getting heated up a little bit.
And on the other side of the women's hockey discourse is your consultant for the PWHPA, the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association. And this year, with it being a centralization year, a lot less of the big names are a part of the PWHPA, obviously, as they're competing before the Olympics. So what's the current state of the PWHPA, and what do you think is next when these players are all back next year?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, first of all, and you know this, Ailish, is that there's so much depth in the association. Mm-hmm. And it's, obviously everybody, wants to talk about the marquee players and the national team players, but there is so much depth beyond that. And we've got 100 active members this year that, we're here to support, and they're part of the Dream Gap Tour for this season. And they're continuing to grow the game. The overall mission for us hasn't changed. It doesn't matter who's wearing that jersey. It's about how do we create a future for girls in the game, and for women to see a future for them in the game, whether that's as a player, a coach, an administrator, or even a fan. Like, how do we include more women in the game? And I think that that's part of the long-term health of our sport. I'm an NHL fan. I obviously play myself. My kids play minor hockey. I want to see hockey continue to grow, and especially in this country. And I think it's critical that we have women playing the game and enjoying the game. So next for us, like, we're continuing this mission of trying to get to a point where we have a professional league that will support the players in the way that we would expect any professional sport to support their players. And, it comes down to, obviously, salaries and health benefits and the infrastructure and the resources that are available. And, of course, the long-term viability of a league that, it's going to be successful in the long term. So, none of that has changed, and, we've got our head down, and we're putting in the work that we need to do, and we've got a lot of great people working on this to try to make that vision a reality.
Mm-hmm. And so in 25 days, there'll be the PWHPA showcase here in Toronto. You have already had one successful one this season out in Nova Scotia. What were the games like there, and what are you excited about being back here in Toronto with some local love?
Yeah, Nova Scotia was an incredible experience. Obviously, we haven't been to Atlantic Canada, but I had a chance as a national team player to play in a world championships there. And it's a special place. And you had an event in Nova Scotia, but we got people from all the surrounding provinces coming out. And they had a great facility in Truro, pretty close to a sold-out crowd for the final. And it was, I think, 2,500 mm-hmm. seats. So I think the players, felt the love there. And certainly felt the support for what we're trying to do. Coming back to Toronto in December, Toronto is hockey in Canada in my mind. And to be able to partner with the Leafs and, have a championship game at Scotiabank Arena, it's just going to be a really a great display, I think, of all the talent in our game. And as I mentioned off the top, beyond just some of the names that people know, when they come out and see this game, they're going to be impressed with the level of play of these women.
And that's December 18th and 19th for anyone local that would like to visit or to be able to watch. It'll be so exciting, especially, as you mentioned, partnering with the Toronto Maple Leafs, which is a big step for women's hockey to have these connections. And the game at Scotiabank Arena will be so, so cool. I wish I was still kicking around in the arena to get out there. A couple last questions for you. So we had the Hockey Hall of Fame induction just last week, and I guess my next question to you is who do you think the next woman will be to enter? I know there's a couple names floating around, and as you have that honor yourself, who would you like to see be next?
Well, there's lots of women I'd like to see. So, I've played with a number, played against a number that are certainly, have earned that. I think from a Canadian perspective, Carolyn Ouellette is likely to be the next, I would think. And then, from a U.S. side, a few players I played against, Jenny Potter, Natalie Darwitz. And then there's also some Europeans, Kim Martin and what she did for hockey in Sweden. So it's great that there's a lot of conversation out there, and there are multiple women deserving of the honor. And that's why it's so special, because it's not an easy one to achieve. So any of them would be great selections.
Obviously, the exclusivity is a part of it and what makes it such a great honor. But when you look and there are so few women still in there as kind of hockey needs to play catch up a little bit here to reflect the history of the women's side of the game. Do you think we'll, like, moving forward, we'll move away from the, hey, here's a bunch of men going in and one woman? Do you see mm-hmm. it catching up a little bit where a couple of these deserving women get in at the same time?
Yeah, I hope we get to that point. And I think that's all part of how we grow the game, because right now, unfortunately, we're an event-based sport where people wait once a year to watch the World Championships or once every 4 years to watch the Olympics. And so you don't see these women enough, and they don't play enough games to be able to, you know, have these goals and games and assist records that we see from guys that play over 1,000 games in the NHL. So as we move forward and have hopefully a professional league that people can follow on a consistent basis, I think we're going to get to know the women more. You're going to have more visibility of how great these women are. And hopefully down the road, we do get to a point where it's not really a caps thing. It's just about, you know, who's deserving of this and who's made a great contribution to the sport.
Before we let you go, Gina, I'd be remiss to ask who's going to win tonight, Canada, United States in Ottawa, big game at 7 p.m.?
Well, you know, it's hard for me not to say Canada. So that's still in my heart. But yeah, after U.S. victory, I think that's hopefully, you know, fired up the Canadians a little bit. Like I said, it's going to be an interesting run here to the Olympics from this point on.
I got a theory about, like, don't use it all up now. Mm. And so I'm kind of like, when the States wins, I'm like, good. Win these ones. These are the ones you get, because this is it.
Yeah,
enjoy
it. You don't want to be that team that's won every single game.
Yes.
When you get to the Olympic Games. There's a heaviness to that, for sure.
You definitely lose a lot. Learn a lot from losing. So if they have to lose a couple now, hopefully that means a gold medal in just a few months.
All I'm saying is they beat the States and you go, we're obviously better than America. Look at us go. And if we lose, we're like saving it for the good ones.
That's exactly
saving it for the big ones. Like, it's win-win.
It's all
win-win
how you can
night.
The messaging.
That's
yeah.
right. Well, Jana Hefford, 5-time Olympic medalist and Hockey Hall of Fame inductee. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Talk to you soon. What a bunch of gems we've had on this hour, let me tell you. Will we ever be able to top it, a back-to-back Hall of Fame hour? Stay tuned.
Everyone's just stare through the glass at Daniele.
They're like,
Will you, Daniele?
I dare you to get better, people, Daniele.
Dare you.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm excited for the game tonight. I think Canada definitely bounces back. They lost in overtime after they were up 2-0. So a little bit of a bitter taste in your mouth if you're one of the Canadians that was on that ice when, you know, America kind of showed them up in front of a home crowd in Kingston. So stay tuned tonight. They play in Ottawa at 7 p.m.
I'm telling you, I'm all for USA right now.
I don't know, JD. Come on.
USA.
But then now after...
Win the meaningless ones.
After this game, they continue their rivalry series with three games in the United States. So...
Oh, it's so many games.
Well, who else are they going to play to prepare?
I know.
They've been playing
the
men's, like junior B teams. It's like, let's play each other.
Well, it's like beat the wheels off all the other countries. Mm. It's like, okay, what test is this? What do you think there is to that? Just the idea of, like, you play so many times. Like, so that's going to be five games over the course of, what, a month?
Yes, between Canada and United States. So they'll play each other three or four more times, and then the rosters will be set before
Beijing. God, they must hate each other's guns.
Oh, they
I don't know how they ever get along off, like, when these Olympic cycles are done. Because obviously there are friends that are on both teams.
And there are multiple instances where a Team Canada player and a Team USA player are actually married.
Yeah. So you have that. You also have the, like, clear business interests, right? Where you have to be like, hey, we need to keep this. But just imagine five times over the course of a month, and it's all ramping up to basically, hey, the winner of this thing, it's a completely different story from mm-hmm. a monetary standpoint over the next, like, 4 years. Mm-hmm. Respect standpoint in your country, in your hometown. Like, yeah, it's the difference between, you know, if Jana has 5 silver medals, I don't know if we're having a retirement ceremony in case, you know what I'm saying?
Like, yes, we are.
I don't know. I'm just saying that it's like, it really is weighty. It's weighty, 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 weighty.
I think it's got to be the tune-up games have to be most difficult for the coaching staff, because you're trying to trim that roster from 28 to 20 or 23, whatever you're taking with you. So you need to see how these women perform within your scheme and within your tactics and how
you're
without
giving it all away.
Exactly. So how much it's like playing a team that you're about to have in a face in a playoff series, late in the regular season, but you need the win.
Yes, and you need to determine who you're going to bring to Beijing and cut
two
or three players. It's so difficult, and I feel for all, like, my friends that are in the program
now. I feel like I'd overthink it as a coach, and I'd be trying to, like, rope-a-dope them with,
you
like...
You overthinking? Never.
Yeah, I'm just trying to give them tactics to prepare for that I don't intend to use, and keep the other stuff back pocket, and then it'll backfire because none of the players on the team have played the tactics. Everyone got tuned up using the wrong tactics.
I got to figure it's so razor thin that my coaching cut strategy would just be like, hey, all right, you guys are on the bubble, okay? This is the bubble group.
Pitch yourselves to me.
If we're losing in that gold medal game, we're down 5-1. Who's taking the hardiest? Who's laying the lumber? You know, who's gonna be my rat?
I like that your final decision is, hey, everything's gone terribly.
Who has
the most utility? Well, not like it's a 3-3 game.
And it's overtime for the gold medal.
But I guess like in overtime for the gold medal.
You know who's already out there.
Yeah, you wouldn't be playing the fourth liner or whatever. Wouldn't be playing the four fars of the world.
Hey, now. The more difficult thing, especially for this season, is a lot of the new faces are coming straight out of college. Yeah. So you haven't been able to see them at kind of the national stage level. So they're great. They're, you know, Patty Kazmaier winners in NCAA. They might have had that last year where there was no real test because COVID kind of threw everything for a loop. And now they're in the national team program where they're going to be on the biggest stage in front of the, you know, brightest lights, and they haven't really been able to prove themselves much. So I don't envy the positions of the coaches on either side for the men's team as well, deciding who's going to go to the Olympics, because there's a lot of question marks, especially for Canada. And the United States just looks stacked in terms of the men's side. So I'm hoping that Canada pulls it together.
So for anyone who doesn't know, Ilitch has actually scored, not only played for the national program, but scored a goal for the national program. Are any of the players that you played with in that tournament in 2019? None of them are on the national team now?
No. Well, definitely a big turnover there.
Gotcha.
I got to tell you, before we move on, maybe do some odds and ends to close the show, that watching some of that last rivalry series game, and Hillary Knight scored that goal, and I just immediately went, like, the fear I have of Hillary Knight... And in that moment was just like, she's just one of those, how does anyone stop that player things? It's like how I feel when Giannis is going and he's like going to the basket and you're like, well, what are you supposed to do really? Like, he's going to step around you and dunk. And like, there's no real strategy for that.
This is,
and Hillary Knight's kind of that. She's just like, we always say that,
like, she's 5'9" built different. And she's like, she's so strong.
No, that's
it's
it.
Insane.
It's just, it's that's it is when
big, that's big for a hockey player, like, and fast.
But,
and
not
solid.
Just big, yeah. Like, yeah, she's just a truck, and so it's just like she's going to the nets. Like, who's stopping that?
And Spooner are built very similar in that sense, where they're like strong, tall.
Yeah.
They bulldoze through you. Yet they're still fast and have finesse. It's insane.
This is like maybe too gossipy, but is Knight still dating Freddie Anderson?
No, that was never a thing.
No,
no. Oh.
That is too gossipy. This is weird now.
I don't know.
They weren't publicly like dating. They went to the All-Star or the NHL awards together.
Okay.
I know
Blake
is,
gossip queen.
Yeah,
is
I know. Okay, Blake, we get it. Like, you're the gossip insider.
You
all right.
Googled it. That's what
I apparently.
You Googled it. No, like, you know how it is. When there's big, meaningful games, there's players you're just afraid of, right? You have the fear. Unless you the fear index. You know, as we started the show with an index, is closer than it.
She's up there in the fear index for me.
I know. It's like Auston Matthews, number one in international play, just because it's going to change the way I feel about him forever. And that's the fear. It's a layered fear, you know? It's just a... It's a four-layer dip of fears of his wrister. Oh, Matthews has been struggling with the Leafs to score even straight goals this year, but he sure found himself at the Olympics. 4 goals against Canada.
Stop it.
I know. I'm putting that out there to be like, it can't happen.
Yeah, no,
you know? Now it can't, because I already did it.
Reverse psychology.
That energy's already out there. You know what I mean?
So we got another night with no Raps, no Leafs. And tonight there's not even NFL. what do we do with ourselves?
Well, we got the Canada-US game.
Yeah.
We've got... The NBA slate looked good until the suspensions and the injuries and stuff. So you got Miami at Detroit, which Miami's fun, but it's not a great matchup. And then you've got Lakers-Knicks with no LeBron. And they're not a very good team to watch without LeBron.
I kind of have a gut feeling, though, that...
It's our Knicks.
I know, but I kind of have a weird feeling about our Knicks tonight where the Lakers are going to win this game. This kind of feels like a... Oh, there's no LeBron now, but they've been playing without LeBron for a while. They come out. They just had it's a Pistons, but they had a comeback win, and he was out of the game. And I don't know. I just kind of have a weird vibe about it. It's a stay away from me gambling wise. But if I was going to bet it, I'd probably take what's the Lakers plus points, plus 4.5 somewhere around there.
I don't have it handy, but
probably somewhere there. But I'm not betting against our Knicks.
4.5 is what it is.
honestly, I gamble too much.
I know this. I set the lines. I am never off by more than a point or two.
Yeah.
Light night overall, only 3 games in the NHL and 4 in the NBA. Yeah. And only 3 of those start at times that would be reasonable for us unless we were heavily invested. So
here's what tonight's going to be.
JD time.
Sleep.
You're going to get a nice little bath.
Yeah.
You're going to put some cucumber slices on your eyes.
Yeah.
And you know what I'm going to do? I secured the bag. They are en route.
Ding dong, not bing bong.
They are being delivered to my apartment within the next 3 hours. I will have the new Miss Vicky's spicy ketchup in my hands, and I will be able to review them for you in the morning, everybody.
You blew it, simps. You had your chance.
I found my own way to get them. They're being delivered, and...
You found your own way to get them.
Blake assisted. You don't even like chips, okay?
Yeah.
And yet I still helped.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're our little potato truffle pig.
Yeah.
you put your snout in the ground, and you sniffed out
good.
Those chips.
I like that.
You found it for us.
What a goofy day. Yeah,
this was a goofy day. This was a fun day.
We
though.
Love a text
like
line
like
Tuesday.
Yeah,
thanks for throwing in your
There
fun.
Were a lot of texts, huh? Like,
oh, we didn't even, like, there's millions.
Well, that's the thing.
Well, maybe we'll get to some tomorrow.
No, but I always know there's so many when Ailish goes, oh, like, she does it. She has a catch and gather move, like, as a shooter, where she's like, oh, boy, okay.
Well, there's
she's
just, like
scrolling through the travel.
Pages and pages. Yeah,
Carrie, that's Carrie. Yeah, you can't do that. Yeah, you palmed it, Ailish. You palmed it.
Pages and pages of texts. There's one about chips on a good note. You don't put bags. You put out large bags of chips. Remember we're talking about, like, they end up at social gatherings, and now people end up trying a new flavor. Usually when people are buying small bag, they pick one of their go-to chips. Corey in the PEF, which is pefferlai, I assume. So remember we were debating, why is this? I know where pefferlai is.
Well, clearly you were like in the PEF, which is pefferlai.
I grew up in Sutton, which is a neighbor to pefferlai in Keswick.
Oh, now you remember where you grew up? Funniest moment of the photo shoot yesterday. So Ailish is starting to get going on her photos. And
the guy was asking me questions, and I didn't know if I was supposed to answer them, or he was just trying to make me feel like comfortable. Like,
no,
he's
that's
asking
what
me,
he's
like,
trying to
analysis
do.
Analysis about my life.
No, it wasn't analysis. They're trying to make you comfortable so that you're just you, and
but
that
then
you start
you
talking.
You don't want to be talking mid photo, like where your mouth is hanging open.
Yeah, that's what you think. And but the, so the photographer, who's a professional, who's done a billion of them, Ailish is like, that's not what you do. She's like, one photo shoot. She's like, this guy is a hack. He's asking me questions. He's trying to get Ailish comfortable. He goes, where are you from? She's like,
I was like,
just stammering away.
North of Toronto.
Yeah,
he's
north
like, there's a
Toronto,
lot of places up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Sutton, never heard of it. And he's like, no.
North of Toronto. I forgot
just
about that.
Panicked, all right?
Yeah, that was good.
All right. No Raptors, no Leafs, no NFL. Do your surf around the NHL, NBA.
Watch Team
Canada, USA.
Smoke the United States. I'm going to say it's a 3-1 win for the girls in the red and white.
Go to our Instagrams and look at
chips
the pictures.
Go to JD and Ailish's Instagrams.
Yeah, go to our Instagrams, all right? JD and Ailish. It's the ones to watch, all right?
Leave mine alone.
Yeah.
All right. It's the Fan Morning Show. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Woo!
Oh, yeah. And the Raptor Show with William Liu at 2 o'clock today. Check me out. That's Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590 The Fan. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow.